The next matter, number 24-1435, Women and Infants Hospital of Rhode Island versus the New England Health Care Employees Union, District 1199 SEIU. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. I'm Mark Kersky. I'm here on behalf of District 1199 of the Service Employees International Union. Your Honor, please, may I have reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is a labor management dispute that belongs in arbitration rather than federal court.
No, the first question is, do we have interlocutory jurisdiction to hear this appeal?
Certainly is, Your Honor.
Okay, let's just go through it. Normally, there is no interlocutory jurisdiction over a refusal to dismiss an action, and that is also true of Section 301 actions, correct?
That's normally true, okay. Yes,
next step, you have to show that one of the exceptions applies, and your argument is the Federal Arbitration Act interlocutory jurisdiction applies here, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Number three, Smith versus Spizzeri, the Supreme Court decision decided in May of 2024, before you filed your brief in this court, and which your brief does not mention, says, in essence, the interlocutory, that there is no power in a district court to dismiss an action pending arbitration. That was the relief you sought. It further says that the clear congressional language in the FAA precludes there being any inherent equitable discretion, which had been the First Circuit rule, to dismiss an action. And it further says, and one of the pragmatic reasons for this is to limit the scope of interlocutory jurisdiction, and the circumstances here do not meet the circumstances described in the court in which interlocutory jurisdiction is permitted. Okay? So tell me what's wrong with that chain of logic.
Your Honor, I would say first, you're right, the preliminary question is whether the matter belongs in this court. And I would say that Your Honor's opinion, the court's opinion in Marie versus Allied Home Builders is the route that we feel brings us to this court. In that case, Your Honor, as you know,
That was decided before Smith.
But the gist of that case, if I may, Your Honor, the gist of that opinion is that the court is to look at what is the thrust of the appeal, which in this case challenges whether or not the court was correct in not sending the case to arbitration. Judge Smith, in his opinion, wrote very clearly that his decision was that whether or not the matter ought to be sent to arbitration. And in fact, the employer also pointed out that the question was whether or not this case ought to be sent to arbitration. So whereas certainly it's true that normally a motion to dismiss would not be the subject of an interlocutory appeal, it's also true that this court, and I apologize for not citing that case, Your Honor, obviously, but it's also true that this court will look at behind the pleadings, behind the heading of the opinion.
And inherent in your argument is that although you moved to dismiss and you did not move to stay, and you surely had strategic reasons for doing that, At this point, we ought to ignore the fact that you did not move for a stay and read your motion to dismiss as though it were a motion to stay.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. The Federal Arbitration Act also provides for interlocutory jurisdiction on a motion to compel arbitration, not just the motion to stay. So I think that
You moved to dismiss?
Pardon me?
You did move to dismiss the case.
The heading of the motion was motion to dismiss or stay. The stay part, of course, was on the...
No, the stay was an alternative remedy going to a different issue, being a different, but you say, related issue that was before the NLRB.
That is correct.
The motion in the alternative for a stay was not as to the 301 action based on the arguments you made there.
The sole argument that we made to the district court in support of dismissal of the action, which was also related to the failure to exhaust remedies, which is part of our affirmative defenses, the sole argument we made to the district court was that this dispute belongs in arbitration. There was no other argument. We were not seeking judgment on the pleadings. It was not a classic 12b6 argument. It was a motion to send this dispute to arbitration.
I'm looking at your motion, not only the title that Judge Lynch read, but the conclusion says, for the foregoing reasons, the complaint should be dismissed for failure to exhaust contractual remedies. Alternatively, the matter should be stayed pending resolution of the unfair labor practice charge. Was there another document that asked to compel arbitration?
The remedy that we asked for was dismissal in support of the failure to exhaust. The argument, the only argument we made in support of that, was that the matter belongs in arbitration.
Sure, but you never asked for an order compelling arbitration.
No, deliberately, no. The only motion, you have the motion, and it says what it says. But the only argument that we made in support of that motion was the motion was an argument that this case belongs in arbitration.
Well, your argument
was
that...
But that could be, you'd make that motion in support of a motion to stay.
Exactly.
So how do we read it as a motion to compel when you only asked for a stay?
The way that the district court interpreted our motion was whether the matter should be sent to arbitration. That's a motion, in essence, to compel arbitration. That's certainly how Judge Smith understood the motion. He did not understand it as anything but that. That's what his opinion says.
Your argument was that it had to be grieved, and if it went through the grievance process, you would take it to arbitration at the end.
Either we would or the employer would.
That it would end up in arbitration.
Exactly, precisely. Because a grievance as defined in the contract is virtually any dispute. So that once a dispute is a grievance under the contract says it must be processed and resolved in arbitration.
Let me follow that. In fact, you didn't ask for a motion to compel, but in fact you couldn't have asked for a motion to compel, could you? Because you couldn't have arbitration until there was a grievance.
We said that there could be arbitration despite the absence of a grievance, but certainly the contract required going to the grievance procedure first.
So put aside waiver and everything like that. Let's suppose you had asked for a motion to compel, and the counterargument would be, well, there's no basis for compelling arbitration until someone files a grievance, which you have not done.
Well, we did not have a grievance. We were not.
Well, you have a dispute with the employer.
The dispute with the employer was the employer's claim that there had been a violation of the no strike.
Right, and weren't they barring someone from attending something?
I think at that point, that was in the grievance procedure. What ultimately happened was the complaint alleged that and it was also in the unfair labor practice proceeding, but what happened in the complaint was a complaint for damages for violation of the no-strike clause as it related to the union access provision of the contract.
Are you saying you couldn't have filed the grievance?
We had no grievance to file, Your Honor.
But there was a dispute.
We had no dispute with them other than that they were suing us.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellee please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning. May it please the court. Timothy Baldwin on behalf of the appellee, Women and Infants Hospital of Rhode Island. To continue the discussion on interlocutory appellate jurisdiction, we did not read the union's motion as a motion to stay under 9 U.S. 3 or as a motion to compel arbitration under 9 U.S. C. 4. We read it as what it clearly stated in the motion as a motion for failure to exhaust contractual remedies, which we understood to be a motion brought under Section 301 of the MLRA. We also did not understand the motion to be directly be seeking arbitration. Our reading of the motion, and we believe the district court's reading of the motion, was that the union was seeking the utilization of the grievance procedure, which we believe precedes the arbitration procedure. And one of our arguments with respect to interlocutory appellate jurisdiction is that a grievance is different from arbitration. There is no definition in the Federal Arbitration Act of what arbitration means. It's done through case law. This court has one case, I believe it's called Fit Tech, which defines arbitration. And the definition of arbitration in that case is very different from the grievance procedure, which is in the collective bargaining.
Here's my problem with the argument. You've now gotten into the merits of whether this Section 301 claim should be dismissed or not. If we have no interlocutory jurisdiction, we don't get into the merits of that argument. Do we agree?
Yes, if you don't have interlocutory jurisdiction, okay. There's no substantive argument to reach.
Okay, and your brother has just said, essentially, we had no grievance until you brought the 301 action. So we tried to get rid of the 301 action, and I assume his intention later was to send something or other to arbitration. But if I'm right about Smith versus Spizzeri, is that how it's pronounced?
I have seen that case, Your Honor. I don't know how to pronounce it either. I did see that case was primarily about an automatic stay in the face of arbitration.
In my view, it directly controls the issue in front of us, It might well be a different matter if there had been a motion to compel arbitration and staying the 301 action, but that isn't what we were faced with.
I'd like to just briefly touch upon one of the other issues with respect to interlocutory appellate jurisdiction, and that is the pendant jurisdiction issue with respect to the unfair labor practice charge. So the union's theory on that front is not that the denial of the motion to stay because of the unfair labor practice charge pending before the NLRB, they're not saying it's directly appealable on interlocutory appeal. They're essentially saying that because there's jurisdiction over the so-called FAA appeal, there's then also this jurisdiction over the denial of the motion to stay on the ULP charge. We just think that that is way beyond what I think Judge Shelley has called hen's teeth rare for pendant appellate jurisdiction. It's just not within the scope because this court can clearly decide whether the issue of arbitrability exists or not without even looking at or touching the ULP issue.
Let me ask a practical question. We rule that there's no appellate jurisdiction or the union reading the tea leaves dismisses anticipating that. You're back in district court. The union then files a straightforward motion to compel arbitration. What then happens?
Well, the district court has already ruled on the merits that the hospital does not have to grieve or arbitrate the dispute. So I'm just thinking this through. If that were to happen, we would point back to the district court's earlier decision. It would almost be like a motion.
So that's what I was thinking, but then that suggests that effectively the court has already denied a motion to compel.
Right, I think that would then raise an ancillary issue, which I don't think has been fully briefed yet, which is essentially what would control in that instance? Would that be controlled under law under the Section 301 of the MLRA? Or would that be a straight Federal Arbitration Act analysis? I think there's case law on pointing in both directions on that front. For example, the Second Circuit has clearly said that that's an MLRA issue. This court, I would say, in the Derwin case from 1983, I think suggests, at the very least, that the Section 1, Section 301 law would apply in a situation like that. But there are other circuits.
So it's a slightly different issue. If the scenario plays out that was just hypothesized, it goes back, they then file a motion to compel arbitration, and certainly the district court's ruling would be informative, but each of you would have a chance to brief that issue. Now with a direct claim being made under the FAA.
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. Another practical question. I'm trying to figure out what makes sense here. Why the union has not, there's a dispute, it seems to me. The union is doing things and you want them not to do them.
It's essentially a pretty specific dispute with respect to the main gravamen of the complaint.
Sure, so let's just take it as a given there's a dispute. Why can't the union just grieve that dispute right now and then arbitrate after the grievance?
Well, our position would be what the district court ruled, which is respective breaches of the collective bargaining agreement, the no-strike provision. We believe that we don't have to grieve that dispute. We believe that we can go straight to district court and file a Section 301 action for damages, which is what we did.
And who would decide that, the arbitrator or the court?
I think the court would decide whether or not the parties have agreed to arbitrate that dispute or not, meaning whether the collective bargaining agreements provisions.
That would then get at whether there's a distinction between you being able to initiate an arbitration as opposed to the union initiating an arbitration that you chose not to initiate.
Right, so the four collective bargaining agreements that are attached to the complaint all give the right to initiate arbitration to the union. There is no specific right in the collective bargaining agreements for the employer to initiate arbitration.
Can I just ask you, so if they filed a grievance like Judge Kayada asked, and you would say this grievance, we don't think it's grievable, right? You're saying that the grievance process doesn't apply. That's right. What you would say in response to the union.
I think so, just based on the theory in the as pleaded in our complaint, which is essentially a breach of the collective bargaining agreement.
Right, but if you did that, could the union then ask for arbitration?
Yes, and I think we'd be in a position, I'm thinking out loud here.
Right.
I think we'd be in a position where we would probably move for summary judgment or declaratory judgment or something along those lines in the district court saying that that's not reasonable or arbitrable under the circumstances.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Please go on.
I have about a minute left. I would like to just stress some of the factual circumstances with respect to the unfair labor practice charge. As I was saying a little bit earlier, the main thrust of the complaint is for a breach of contract with the no-strike clause, essentially engaging in work stoppages with respect to holidays. And that's really the gravamen of the complaint and where the damages flow from. There is another portion of the complaint which mentions an unfair labor practice issue. And what happened there is in February of, I think it was 2023, the hospital's allegation is that a union representative came in and engaged in sort of hostile behavior. That then was the subject of a ULP. But there were subsequent work stoppages after that, and those are the work stoppages that we are alleging were breaches of the no strike clause. So we're not bringing a specific allegation about the ULP. So from our perspective, it's a completely separate event. And that's pleaded in, I believe it's paragraphs 23 to 25 from the complaint.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please reintroduce himself back on the record? He has a 2-minute rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark Kersky for the appellant, District 1199. The reason that the court's hypothetical questions make so much sense is because the more you look at the complaint and you think about this dispute, the more it's the kind of case that unions and management ought to resolve in their grievance and arbitration procedure.
So why then file a grievance?
That certainly is an option. We were sued, and we answered the complaint. Certainly the possibility of a motion to compel arbitration or to stay, to go back to the district court and do that. Sometimes, as labor lawyers, we are properly criticized for trying to cut to the chase. This was a case about a...
You understand appellate courts are constrained by rules about interlocutory jurisdiction, and your chase is different from ours.
More today than ever, Judge. But I do think that as you think about this dispute and what kind of a dispute it is, what does holiday work require, what does union access require, what is a contract that actually doesn't even name the union in the new no-strike clause, it prohibits employees from striking. What does this mean? Those questions belong in front of an arbitrator. They don't belong here. They don't belong in the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this.